And we'll ask Yahweh at this time to bless this congregation and this multitude as we gather after the only Christian holiday left to Yahweh's people, the Anglo-Saxons call Thanksgiving. We thank you for bringing these people tonight, Yahshua, safely, mentally, physically, and spiritually. We ask that you bless their children and their families, their wives and husbands, their grandchildren, their grandparents. We ask for an awakening through thy Holy Spirit, Yahweh, to thy heritage people, Israel, who are the descendants of Jacob, the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, German, Lombardic people of the earth. Be with us and guide us. We ask for an opening of the ears tonight and an opening of the eyes so these saints may understand and see the paganism that has been brought against us and handed down through folklore by the wicked people, our ancestors who knew no better, thinking they were doing right, but all the time were provoking Yahweh to jealousy and anger. So be with us, and we do give you all the honor, glory, and dominion forever. We ask this prayer and blessing in the name of Yahweh, who is our Yahshua, who is the Father, the Seed, and the Holy Spirit, all one. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, good evening. We have a study tonight which is entitled Christmas is Pagan. And it's going to be a very interesting study. You may want to take a lot of notes tonight, or you may want to request a tape to further study the key points off this talk tonight. But when I was a young fella, just like when you people were younger, your parents taught you that there was a Santa Claus. They taught you that Christmas was the celebration or the Mass of Jesus Christ when Jesus the Messiah was born into a flesh body in a manger. You were told that there was a big, old, fat, dumpy dude who dressed up in a communist red outfit and wiggled that 350 pounds down a chimney that was 1 foot square. And he came down and ate all your crackers and drank your milk and made a pig out of himself and didn't leave anything for the next day. And you were lied to. Thou shalt not bear false witness. And later on, as you got a little older, of course you were told that there's no such thing as Santa Claus. But the thing is, since it was related to what was called Christ Mass, some people even started to say to themselves, well, is there a Jesus Christ? So the seed of doubt was planted into the minds of the children for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And if mom and dad lied to them about this Santa Claus and the giving of presents, what else did they lie to the children about? And the doubt set in with the children against the parents at a very early age. We must be examples to the children and to the flock. And we must not bear false witness against thy neighbor or thy children. So I just took it for granted because my parents told me it was true. Because my parents told me, I thought it was right. Just like when I was told when I was a young man that the courts weren't corrupt. And look what we have today. Same thing. Everyone that they told you to respect, you found out that there is no respect in them. They've destroyed our nation. The politicians, the judges, the educational field, and Santa Claus. So that's why tonight we're heading into this study entitled Christmas is Pagan. And it's going to be in-depth. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. So I'm going to start. Stop and think for a moment. Very few people have ever reflected on why they believe what they do, why they follow the customs they do, or from where those customs came. We were born into a world filled with customs. We grew up accepting them without any type of question whatsoever. Why? Possibly because we're the sheep. that Jesus Christ said we were. But by nature, we do tend to follow the crowd. Whether right or wrong, we follow the crowd. Sheep follows others to the slaughter. And humans, or the descendants of Jacob, the Israelites of old call Anglo-Saxons, they had better stop to check on which direction they're really going. How and when did Christmas originate is the question. Does Christmas really celebrate the birth of the Messiah, Jesus the Christ? Was Jesus really born on December 25th? Did the original apostles, who knew Jesus personally and walked with him for 3 years and were taught by him, celebrate his birthday on December 25th? And did they celebrate his birthday at all, is the next question. If Christmas is the chief of the Christian holidays, as we're taught today, why do so many non-Christians observe it? Do you know this answer? Why do people exchange presents with family members, friends, relatives at Christmas time? Was it because the wise men presented gifts to the Christ child? I think, as we go tonight, the answers to these questions are going to totally amaze you. Most people have supposed a lot of things about Christmas that are not true. Let's get down to the brass tacks. What do the encyclopedias say? Most people in this country, a lot of them, have sets of encyclopedia in their living rooms or in their dens, somewhere in their house, but they fail to open those books up. And there's a lot of wisdom in those books. The word Christmas means Mass of Christ, or as it came to be shortened, Christ Mass. It came to non-Christians and Protestants from the Roman Catholic Church. And where did they get it from? Not from the New Testament, not even from the Bible, not from the original apostles who were personally instructed by the Messiah, but it gravitated in the 4th century into the Roman Catholic Church from paganism. Since the celebration of Christmas has come to the world from the Roman Catholic Church and has no authority but that of the Roman Catholic Church, brought down, of course, through what you call Christianity, or all the other churches who have spread out from what? The Roman Catholic Church. The protest movement, or the Protestants, came from an individual called who? Martin Luther. What was Martin Luther before he was a Protestant? He was a Catholic priest. And all of churchianity today, or these churches that you know of them, are an extended branch of Roman Catholicism. Now, since the celebration of Christmas has come to the world from this Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, and has no authority but other than what the Roman Catholic Church says, let us examine the Catholic Encyclopedia, 1911 edition, published by that church under the heading Christmas. You will find, quote, Christmas was not among the earliest festivals of the church. The first evidence of the feast is from Egypt. Pagan customs centering around the January calends gravitated to Christmas, unquote. And in the same encyclopedia, under the heading of Natal Day, we find that the early Catholic father Origen's acknowledged this truth. In the scriptures, no one is recorded to have kept a feast or held a great banquet on Christ's birthday. It is only sinners like Pharaoh and Herod who make great rejoicings over the day in which they were born into this world, unquote. Emphasis added. So you see, birthdays are what? Pagan. Birthdays are pagan. See, the Irish have it put together. They celebrate at the what? The death of one of those Anglo-Saxon Israelites of old, because the spirit and the flesh have crossed over and the spirit has returned back to the throne of God from where it came. Let's continue. The Encyclopedia Britannica, the 1946 edition, has this. Christmas, or the Mass of Christ, Christmas was not among the earliest festivals of the church. It was not instituted by Christ or the apostles or by Bible authority. It was picked up afterward totally from paganism. The Encyclopedia Americana, 1944 edition, says Christmas, it was, according to many authorities, not celebrated in the first centuries of the Christian Church, as the Christian usage in general was to celebrate the death of remarkable persons rather than their births. The communion, which is instituted by New Testament Bible authority, is a memorial of the death of the Messiah. A feast was established in memory of this event in the 4th century. In the 5th century, the Western Church ordered it to be celebrated forever on the day of the old Roman feast of the birth of Saul, as no certain knowledge of the day of Christ's birth has existed. Now, we know within the last 10 years, through pyramidology, the Great Stone Bible, and the mathematical equations of the Great Pyramid of Gaza, we know that the Messiah was born into the earth on September 29, 2 BC, on the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, and was circumcised on the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles, to open and to close that holy event. It says, now notice, these recognized historical authorities show Christmas was not observed by Christians for the first 200 or 300 years after the crucifixion, a period now longer than the entire history of the United States as a nation. It got into the Western or Roman Church by the 4th century A.D., It was not until the 5th century that the Roman Church ordered it to be celebrated as an official Christian festival. As I said, Jesus was not even born in the winter season. When the Christ child was born, quote, there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. Luke 2:8. This never could have occurred in Judea in the month of December, because the shepherds always brought their flocks from the mountainsides and fields and corralled them no later than October 15 to protect them from the cold, rainy season that followed that date. Notice that the Bible itself proves in the Song of Solomon 2:11 and Ezra chapter 10, paragraphs 9 and 13, that winter was a rainy season, not permitting shepherds to abide in the open fields at night. It was an ancient custom among the Judeans of those days to send out their sheep to the fields and deserts about the Passover or early spring and bring them home at the commencement of the first rain, says the Adam Clark Commentary, Volume 5, page 370, New York edition. The Syrians and the Armenians who clung to, continuing on, this authority states, during the time they were out, the shepherds watched them night and day. As the first rain began early in the month of March, Esvan, which answers to part of our October and November, sometimes in October, we find that the sheep were kept out in the open country during the whole summer. And as those shepherds had not yet brought home their flocks, it is a presumptive argument that October had not yet commenced, and that consequently the Messiah was not born on the 25th of December, when no flocks were out in the fields, nor could he have been born later than September, as the flocks were still in the fields by night. On this very ground, the nativity in December should be given up. The feeding of the flocks by night in the fields is a chronological fact. You can see the quotations from the Talmudist and Lightfoot. Any encyclopedia or any other authority will tell you that the Messiah was not born on December 25th. The Catholic Encyclopedia frankly states this fact. The exact date of Jesus' birth is known today to be September 29, 2 BC. Now, if Yahweh had wished us to observe and to celebrate Christ's birthday, He would not have so completely hidden this exact date from the time of His birth. And of course, only the elect, only the keepers of time, only the elect who were brought out of darkness into His marvelous light would not only realize this, but would totally comprehend the situation. Then how did this pagan custom creep into the Western Christian world? The new Schaff Herzog Encyclopedia of Religious Knowledge explains very clearly in its article on Christmas, quote, how much that date of the festival depended upon the pagan Brumilia, December 25, following the Saturnalia and the new sun, cannot be accurately determined. The pagan Saturnalia and Brumilia were too deeply entrenched in the popular custom to set aside by Christian influence. The pagan festival with its riot and merrymaking was so popular that Christians were glad of an excuse to continue its celebrations with little change in spirit and in manner. Christian preachers of the West and the Near East protested against the unseemly virility with which Christ's birthday was celebrated, while Christians of Mesopotamia accused their Western brethren of idolatry and sun worship for adopting as Christian this pagan festival, unquote. Remember, the Roman world had been pagan. Prior to the 4th century, Christians were few in number, though increasing, and were persecuted by the government and by pagans alike. But with the advent of Constantine as emperor, who made his profession of Christianity in the 4th century, who was a born-again Jimmy Carter, he was a phony, thinking that Christianity was a so-called, a spiritual understanding instead of a racial, put Christianity on an equal footing with paganism. People of the Roman Catholic world begin to accept this now popular Christianity by the hundreds of thousands. That beast in Revelation that was wounded in its head was what? The Roman Empire. And yet it came back again to be as strong as it ever was, known now as the Roman Catholic Church. Now remember, these people had grown up in pagan customs, chief of which was this idolatrous festival of December 25th. It was a festival of merrymaking with its special spirit. The people loved it, just like they do today in the United States of America. They put everything aside to celebrate what? Let's get drunk. Let's give presents. Let's put up these Christmas trees. Let's put this mistletoe up. And everyone can be happy. They didn't want it to give up. Now, the same article in the new Schaff-Herzog Encyclopedia of Religious Knowledge explains how the recommendation and recognition by Constantine of Sunday, which had been the day of pagan sun worship, and how the influence of the pagan Manichaeism, which identified the Son of God with the physical sun, gave these pagans of the 4th century, now turning over wholesale to Christianity, their excuse for calling their pagan festival, date of December 25th, the birthday of the sun god, S-U-N, and they turned it to the birthday of the Son of God. And that is how Christmas became fastened on our Western world, or the Anglo-Saxons, the dispersed tribes of the house of Israel from the northern kingdom after the Assyrian bondage. And this has been handed down to our ancestors, from our ancestors, right to today in late 1981, going into 1982, when they have observed these customs for thousands of years. They're still being celebrated today among the Anglo-Saxons, or God's chosen people. Then how did this pagan custom creep in? Well, we've got to understand. The new Schaff-Herzog Encyclopedia of Religious Knowledge explains it clearly. We must understand that we have been duped. We have been had not only by our educational standards, but by our churches, who have led all of our people down the road of total paganism against Jesus the Messiah. Again, from the Encyclopedia Britannica, certain Latins, as early as the year 354, may have transferred the birthday from January 6th to December 25th, which was then a Mithridatic feast, or a birthday of an unconquered sun, S-U-N. The Syrians and the Armenians, who clung to January 6th, accused the Romans of sun worship and idolatry, contending that the feast of December 25th had been invented by disciples of Serentinus, or worshippers of the sun. But if we got Christmas from the Roman Catholics, and they got it from paganism, where did the pagans get it? Where, when, and what was its truly real origin? It is the chief custom of the corrupt system denounced all through Bible prophecies and teachings under the name of Babylon. And it started and originated in the original Babylon of ancient Nimrod. Yes, it stems from roots whose beginnings were shortly this side of the flood. Nimrod, the grandson of Ham, son of Noah, was the real founder of the Babylonian system that has gripped the world ever since, including this date. The system of organized competition, of man-ruled governments and empires, based upon the competitive and profit-making economic system. And of course, AB doesn't mind that at all either, does he? You know, there's a little joke going around. In school, little Mary was sitting there, and the teacher was asking the children what they did the night before Christmas and during Christmas. And she said, "Mary, what does your family do for Christmas?" "Oh," Mary says, "we get up early in the morning, and my brothers and sisters, and we run down to the Christmas tree, and there's gifts laying all under the Christmas tree, and we all join hands, and we all sing Merry Christmas." And there was a little Jewish witch sitting in the front row, and the teacher says, "What do you do? What do you Jews do?" "Well," she says, "we really don't celebrate the day. It's the night before that's so important." And the teacher says, "Well, why is that?" "Well," she says, "down at Daddy's store where he sells all the merchandise to these fools who celebrate this pagan holiday, after the last customer walks out, Daddy pulls the blind down and puts the clothes sign out, and we all join hands and we all dance around the cash register saying, 'What a friend we have in Jesus.'" And that's about it, because our people go in debt, they go broke. And there's another thing. I've had people tell me that Christmas Day is the greatest letdown they've ever had in their life. Everyone is expecting something so special to happen, and the only thing that happens is the next 10 days when all the bills come in. That's the great thing that takes place. A total spiritual letdown. Completely. Well, we've got to understand that we have been, shall we say, hoodwinked. Nimrod built the Tower of Babel, the original Babylon, ancient Nineveh, and many other cities. He organized this world's first kingdom. The name Nimrod in Hebrew is derived from Marad, meaning he rebelled. From many ancient writings, considerable substance is learned from this man who started the first organized worldly apostasy from God that has dominated this world until now. Nimrod was so evil, it is said he married his own mother, whose name was Semiramis. After Nimrod's untimely death, his so-called mother wife, Semiramis, propagated the evil doctrine of the survival of Nimrod as a spiritual being. She claimed a full-grown evergreen tree sprang overnight from a dead tree stump, which symbolized the springing forth of new life of the dead Nimrod. On each anniversary of his birth, she claimed, Nimrod would visit the evergreen tree and leave gifts under it. December 25th was the birthday of Nimrod. This is the real origin of the Christmas tree. Now, who killed Nimrod? Well, if you go into the book of Jasher and read the book of Jasher, you'll find out that Esau cut his head off while Nimrod and some of his men were walking through the forest one day. And as they pursued after Esau, and they were chasing him down to kill him, he ended up in the house of Jacob, his brother, and he was very tired, hungry, and weak. And it was at that given time that Esau sold his what? His birthright to his brother Jacob. This happened right after he cut off the head of Nimrod in the forest. Now, through her scheming and designing, Semiramis the mother wife of Nimrod, her son. They slept with each other and everything. Seminarius became the Babylon Queen of Heaven. And Nimrod, under various names, became the divine son of heaven. Through the generations in this idolatrous worship, Nimrod also became the false Messiah, son of Baal, the sun god. In this false Babylonian system, the mother and child, Seminarius and Nimrod reborn, became chief objects of worship. This worship of mother and child spread over the world. The names varied in different countries and languages. In Egypt, it was Isis and Osiris. In Asia, it was Cybele and Dieris. In pagan Rome, Fortuna and Jupiter Pure. Even in Greece and China and Japan and Tibet is to be found the counterpart of the Madonna long before the birth of the Messiah. Thus, during the 4th and 5th centuries after the crucifixion, when the pagans of the Roman world were accepting the new popular so-called Christianity by the hundreds of thousands, carrying their old pagan customs and beliefs along with them, merely cloaking them with Christian-sounding names. The Madonna and the mother and child idea also became popularized, especially at Christmas time. Every Christmas season, you'll hear sung and chanted dozens of times the hymn, Silent Night, Holy Night, with its familiar mother and child theme. We who have been born in such a Babylonian system and world, reared and steeped into these things all our life, have been taught to revere these things as holy and sacred. We never question to see where they came from, whether they came from the Bible or they came from pagan idolatry. There's another song that they sing, and they've got them spewed all over the streets of all the cities, villages, and towns of the United States right now. Noel. And all you have to do to find out the meaning of that word is to put a slice between the O and the E, and it tells you exactly what that word means. No God. No E-L. E-L is God. No God. And they have people singing it from now until after December 25th. We are shocked to learn the truth. Some, unfortunately, take offense at the plain truth. But Yahweh God commanded His faithful ministers, cry aloud, spare not, lift up the voice like a trumpet, and show My people their transgressions. Shocking as these facts are, they are the plain facts of history and the Bible. The real origin of Christmas goes back to ancient Babylon. It is bound up in the organized apostasy which has gripped and deceived this world these many centuries. In Egypt, it was also believed that the son of Isis, the Egyptian name for the Queen of Heaven, was born December 25th. Paganism celebrated this famous birthday over most of the known world for centuries before the birth of Jesus Christ. December 25th is not the birthday of Jesus, the true Messiah. The apostles and early true church never celebrated Christ's birthday at any time. There was no command or instruction to celebrate it in the Bible. However, we are commanded to observe, not celebrate, the date of His death, which is recorded in 1 Corinthians 11, 24-26, and John 13, 4-14-17. Thus, the ancient idolatrous Chaldean mysteries, founded by this wife mother of Nimrod, had been handed down through the pagan religions under new Christian-sounding names. It was the same car, they just painted it a different color. Just like they do today. They never put a better engine in there to get 50 miles to a gallon. They just put the chrome in a different place, different styled headlights, but it's the same dumpy running automobile. Now, where do we get the mistletoe custom? Among the ancient pagans, the mistletoe was used at this festival of the winter solstice because it was considered sacred to the sun. Also because of its supposed miraculous healing power. The pagan custom of kissing under the mistletoe was an early step in the night of revelry and drunken debauchery, or running around with everyone's wives. Celebrating the death of the old sun and the birth of the new sun at the winter solstice, the mistletoe was sacred in pagan festivals and it is a parasite to our true race and to Yahweh God. Holly berries were also considered sacred to the sun god. The Yule log is in reality the sun log. Yule means wheel, a pagan symbol of the sun. Yet today, professing Christians speak of the sacred Yuletide season. Even the lighting of fires and candles as a Christian ceremony is merely a continuation of the pagan custom, encouraging the waning sun god as he reached the lowest place in the southern skies. The Encyclopedia Americana says, "The holly, the mistletoe, the Yule log are relics of pre-Christian times and represent total paganism." The book Answers to Questions, compiled by Frederick J. Haskins, found in public libraries, says, "The use of Christmas wreaths is believed by authorities to be traceable to the pagan customs of decorating buildings and places of worship at the feast which took place at the same time as Christmas. The Christmas tree is from Egypt, and its origin dates from a period long before and to the Christmas era." But surely dear old Santa Claus is not a creature of pagan birth. But he is. And his real character is not so benevolent and holy as many suppose. The name Santa Claus is a corruption of the name of Saint Nicholas, a Roman Catholic bishop who lived in the 5th century. Look in the Encyclopedia Britannica, volume 19, pages 648 to 649, the 11th edition, where you'll read, quote, "Saint Nicholas, Bishop of Myra, a saint honored by the Greeks and Latins on the 6th of December, a legend of his surreptitious bestowal of dowries on the three daughters of an impoverished citizen, is said to have originated the old custom of giving presents in secret on the eve of Saint Nicholas, December 6th, subsequently transferred to Christmas Day. Hence the association of Christmas with Santa Claus. Through the year, parents punish their children for telling falsehoods. Then at Christmas time, they themselves tell their little children that this Santa Claus, which is a total lie, it is any wonder many of them, when they grow up and learn the truth, begin to believe, is God a myth too? One little fellow, sadly disillusioned about Santa Claus, said to a playmate, "Yes, I'm going to look into this Jesus Christ business too. Is it Christian to tell children myths and falsehoods? Yahweh God says, thou shalt not bear false witness. It may seem right and be justified by human reason, but Yahweh says, I've told people this, and the people say, well, I know you're right, but I'm still going to put the tree up and I'm going to do it to light the world for Jesus Christ." Okay? Well, Yahweh says, "There is a way that seemeth right to a man, but the end thereof is a way of death." Old Nick also is a term for the devil. Is there a connection? Satan appears as an angel of light to deceive. 2 Corinthians 11:14 and Revelation 12:9. And so when we examine the facts, we are astonished to learn that the practice of observing Christmas is not, after all, a true Christian practice, but a pagan custom, one of the ways of Babylon that our Anglo-Saxon Israelite people have fallen into. To continue on about Santa Claus, if you look up into your Webster's Dictionary, the one I have before me right here, was published in 1943, under the word Nick, it says that Old Nick, or Saint Nick, is the devil. So when you tell the children and exonerate Saint Nick, you are telling your children or your nephews that they should follow after Satan, believe in him, put all their trust in all kinds of presents and gifts. And this is exactly the total blackout of understanding that's been handed down to our children. And of course, as the gifts are giving to them and are continued to give to them with no working or reward for it, but knowing that at a certain time of the year, no matter what they do, they're going to get something for nothing. And that a fantasy person is going to give it to them is the same as what our people live in society today under this Jewish international communist system. These are things that we must watch out for and that we must totally correct now. But if the Bible is silent, telling us to observe Christmas or recording any such observance by the apostles or early true church, it does have something to say about the Christmas tree. This will come as a real surprise to many. Would you turn with me to Jeremiah chapter 10? In the Old Testament, we'll turn to the Latter-day prophet, Jeremiah, and we will read chapter 10 and see why this chapter was selected to be put forth in this study. And we will read 1 through 6. Jeremiah chapter 10, 1 to 6. And Jeremiah, writing his prophecy through the divine inspiration of Yahweh God, states, "Hear you the word which Yahweh spoke unto you, O house of Israel." It doesn't say the world. It doesn't say Tibet, Japan, Hong Kong, Korea, Mexico. It says, "O house of Israel," which is racial. Call Anglo-Saxons today. "Thus saith Yahweh God, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them." Paragraph 3, "For the customs, or the statutes, or ordinances are vanity, and of these people are vain. For a person or one cuts a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with an axe. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it moves not. They are upright as the palm tree, but speak not. They must needs be born, because they cannot go anywhere. But be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil. Neither also is it in them to do good. For as much as there is none like thee, O Yahweh, thou art great, and thy name is great in might." You see people who put up these big Christmas trees, they go out and they spend their $50, some of them, to find the prettiest tree in the whole lot. They take it home, and they fasten it with nails to a stand. They deck it with gold and silver, and now even electric lights and tinsel and bulbs. Is that correct? And then they put it in the nicest spot of their living room. So when everyone walks into their house, they can go over and they say, "Come, let me show you my tree. Isn't it beautiful?" And what are they doing? They're worshiping that tree just as the heathen did, and what Jeremiah told us not to do in chapter 10 of the book of Jeremiah, as Yahweh commanded his race, the Anglo-Saxons, called the Israelites of old, not to get involved in. Not to get involved in. There is a perfect description of the Christmas tree, termed by the Eternal as the way of the heathen, the customs of the people. We are commanded not to learn that way or follow it. It is also viewed in this passage as idolatry. The fifth verse shows that these trees cannot speak, cannot walk, but must be carried. "But be not afraid of them, for they," the trees, "cannot do evil. Neither also is it in them to do good. They are not gods to be feared." Some people misread this to make it say there is no harm in having a Christmas tree, but that is not what it says. It says you are not to have this tree in your home, or to have any association or involvement with it. But when it comes to the most important part of all this in Christian Christmas observance, the Christmas shopping season, the buying and exchanging of gifts, many will exclaim triumphantly, "Well, at least the Bible tells us to do that. Didn't the wise men give gifts when Christ was born?" Again, we are in for more surprises when we learn the plain truth. First, Let's look at the historic origin of the trading gifts back and forth, then see exactly what the Bible does say about it. From the Bibliothèque of Sacra, volume 12, page 153 to 155, we quote, "The interchange of presents between friends is almost characteristic of Christmas and the Saturnalia, and must have been adopted by Christians from the pagans, as the admonition of Tertullian plainly shows. The fact is, this custom, fastened upon people of exchanging gifts with friends and relatives at the Christmas season, has not a single trace of Christianity in it. Strange though that it may seem, this does not celebrate Christ's birthday nor honor it or him. Suppose someone you love has a birthday. You want to honor that person on his or her birthday. Would you lavishly buy gifts for everyone else, trading gifts back and forth with all of your other friends and loved ones, but ignore completely any gift for the one whose birthday you are honoring? Rather absurd when viewed in the right light, isn't it? And by the time you have to buy a gift for everyone in the family, you're broke. And the Jews are running all the way to the bank. Yet this is exactly what people the world over are doing. They honor a day that is not Christ's birthday by spending every dime they can scrape together in buying presents to trade back and forth among friends and relatives. Jesus said, I am sent only but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. What are all these other races doing, celebrating so-called his birthday, exchanging of gifts when he said he was sent only unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel, who are the Anglo-Saxons today? But I can say, many pastors and ministers, that when the month of December rolls around, nearly all professing Christians forget to give gifts to Christ and his cause almost altogether. December often is the most difficult month to keep Christ's work from dying. People are too busy trading gifts back and forth among themselves and getting drunk to think of him and his work, it seems. Then in January and even into February, it seems they have to catch up from what they spent for Christmas, so they seldom get back to normal in supporting the Messiah and his work before March. Now consider what the Bible says about the wise men giving gifts when Christ was born. Turn with me to Matthew 2, 1 through 11. And it states in Matthew 2, 1 to 11, Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that was born king of the Judeans? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and the scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where the Messiah should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophets, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, art not the least among the princes of Judea. For out of you shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel.